why aren't we in charge of everything?
Well, just player safety and scheduling. Give me $200,000 and I'll do it. That's all I need. I'm a very simple man. Tim, what would it take for you to do that job?
$200 sounds fine. I would take that.
You can't make the same as me.
Okay, $220.
There you go. More. You're making me laugh today. It's very funny. Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Beautiful November morning. Absolutely gorgeous. I checked the forecast because I'm having an issue getting a plow guy. A plow guy up and quit on me. Did you know that 2 weeks ago he sent me a text saying, it's a long drive to your house. I live in Long Lake, which is 25 minutes away. And I totally understand. He gave me a lot of runway to find a new plow guy, but finding a reliable plow person, Tim, in northern Michigan who's going to give me a good smoking deal is not easy. So I've been pounding the pavement here for the last week trying to find a plow guy. What are you smiling about?
There's a hidden context there. Is you're trying to find someone to do it for next to nothing. There's plenty of plow guys. The northern Michigan is just built to handle the snow. You're trying to find someone to do it for cheap. Let's call a spade here.
If there are any listeners in my area who want to plow my driveway, I will happily sign stick. I can show you the chickens. I can get some eggs.
It's a very tough driveway. Like professionals would struggle with it. They do struggle with it.
I've added on to it with the new house. So it kind of wise off before you get to the big hill. We had, not to scare anybody off, 2 years ago, my plow guy got stuck plowing the driveway, obviously. Someone came to get him out. That guy got stuck. And then someone came to get both of them out. So it's a challenging driveway, but people like a challenge. I think it's fun.
The most difficult driveway of all time, and you want someone to do it for like $10.
The guy did it last year for $50 a time, which is a smoking deal. It's like a quarter of a mile long, and it's just, it's a terrible driveway.
Dirt, it's twisty-turny, it's narrow. Sandy,
it's just twigs and sticks, and it's not flat. It's kind of like banked, like a NASCAR kind of slope curve. But anyways, I've been dealing with that, so that's been a little trying, but I just checked the forecast. No snow until December. Middle of December. It's very unseasonably warm here, and I'm grateful for it, because I have nobody lined up, and it's just kind of, it's nice. It's cold, but no snow. So it's good. It's good for my house build. It's good for the no snow on the driveway plowing. And it's just good all around. So I'm a little happy, Tim. And you know what else? Why I'm happy?
Why?
There was a hell of a fight last night in the NHL. Absolute, just old school. Let's just throw some punches. Josh Gadovich from the Florida Panthers and Brendan Dillon from the New Jersey Devils decided to just have a good old fashioned fight. Punch in the face contest. This was one of those fights, Tim, that you rarely see. Two bigger dudes, but they don't have that heavyweight mentality of not getting hit. They just went for it, buried their head, and started to throw. What did you? You're not a violence guy. All of our listeners know this. You're a pacifist. You like to use your words whenever you're in a situation to try to get out of it. I am on the other side of that sheet. What did you think of this fight? Did it make you nervous?
You're describing being an adult, using your words. I loved it. So this was, we had a couple.
Oh my gosh, that's the funniest thing you've ever said. That's so good. That's called being an adult, dummy.
Yeah.
All right. I'm 42. Well, I'm just picking fights with everybody.
We had a couple people tag us in the fight when it happened on Twitter. And so, because I hadn't been on Twitter. Actually, I taught the class last night. I meant to mention that. The thing I do twice a year. Self-defense class? No, through SUNY Adirondack. I teach that podcasting course. And last night was the biggest one we've had yet. We had 15 people sign up.
Oh, wow.
That was good
for you.
I was offline for most of the evening. And so I checked Twitter after. I got tagged in the fight. And then Slack and our Slack channel was blowing up about it, too. So I knew it was going to be good. It was great. It was great. Like you said, two guys throwing, but almost right away, Gadjevich gets the jersey over his head. And this is kind of my question for you, because I know it's different from like the 90s and 80s and stuff, but nowadays it's a pretty dangerous spot to be in when you can't see or protect yourself. And most guys would sort of either tap out immediately or start to bring the fight down to the ice and just with the refs break it up when they can't see. But he just keeps throwing. And that is not something you see very often. So like, what's the mindset and what's it like when you probably haven't had that happen to you because you're so tall, but what's it, how can you continue fighting like that?
Sorry, I called him Josh. It's Jonah. I don't know why I called him Josh. But in the rule book, once the jersey goes over the head, the refs get in every single time. The reason they didn't get in this time is both players are still fighting, still throwing punches, so they don't want to get tagged with the right. But per the code, you should stop if someone's jersey's over their head. But if they're still throwing, it's fair game. Bombs away. But just going back to the start of the fight, I love how it started. Did it not look weird to you, Brendan Dillon, the first half of the fight? He did not look like he wanted to throw his right hand. It was such a weird start where Gadjevich is throwing bombs and Dilly is just sitting there kind of doing jersey jabs and just kind of his right arm is almost like noodle-like. It was a very strange fight. Go back and watch it. I don't know if his shoulder's injured or if his elbow's messed up. He wasn't throwing very hard, and it didn't look like he wanted to hurt his arm. And then you got how do you say his last name? Gadjevich?
I think, yeah. Yep.
And you have Gadjevich. He's throwing with intent, and he wants to knock this guy out, and he's a tough cat. Like, he's been around for a long time, and he knows how to fight. And he finally tags Dilly right at the end, and down she goes. And I've said this for a long time. Brendan Dillon could be a calendar model. He has a sculpted body. He is absolutely jacked. He's got the curly locks, the chiseled jaw. He looks like a prince from a Disney movie. He does not know how to fight. He is a strong man. He has good intentions. He sticks up for his teammates. He sticks his nose in there. But as soon as the gloves are off and he is fighting somebody who knows what they're doing, he gets beat up all the time. And it's no fault on him. He's a good defenseman, stay-at-home guy, moves the puck okay. But gosh, he's just a terrible fighter. He gets beat up all the time when he fights someone who's relatively tough. And it happened last night because Gadjevich tagged him. And he had no business tagging him. You have the jersey over the head. You have full control. You have length on him. Just take your time and pick your spot and pop him with one and the fight's over. When I would get tired, Tim, I would just throw a jersey over the guy's head because I always had that option. I'm like, this sucks. I don't want to fight anymore. I can't hit you, Cam Jansen. Jersey over the head. Like, I'm never, like, it's just such a boring fight for me. So Dilly could have done that the whole time, but he just decided to just keep close, stay in the fight, and then gave Gadjevich the opportunity to tag him right at the end. He stayed square the whole time. If you watch the fight, Gadjevich has a good grab on his arm where he has him right where the bicep is. So Dilly couldn't get out from that, but he could have readjusted, could have did a little thing to move his arm in a better position, but he did. He just stood square and Gadjevich just buried him. But what a great fight. It's just it's a throwback. I loved it. It's just good for hockey to see a fight like that after months and months of seeing these heavyweights just grab on and nothing lands. And it's just all for show. I love that. It's so fun to watch.
It was great. You've talked about Dillon being a terrible fighter basically for years now.
Years.
He doesn't fight that often, maybe once or twice a season. And every time there's something you can pick at and say, Dilly, what are you doing? But I love that he hung in there and stayed in there. And he ate a couple of good rights from Gadjevich and stayed in there. And then eventually Juan just took him out. But cool for Gadjevich to stay in there too, to not even know, like, I think the reason that he stayed in there was probably because he knew that Dillon wasn't a very good fighter and he knew he had a good grip on him and knew he could still pull this together. And he basically, what the kids call, no-scoped him. He wasn't even looking and still got him. And yeah, it was
what
great.
What do they call it?
No-scoping. Like in video games, if you shoot without aiming down the barrel, I call that a no-scope.
Oh, I like
that. You're not using the scope. And so this is basically what it was because he wasn't looking, but he still got him just perfectly. And it's just funny too, like Lazan and Pod Colson last week, when you have two strong guys that don't know how to fight,
this is
what you get. And it's a lot of fun to watch.
So much more entertaining. And are the Florida Panthers the toughest team in the league? They might be. Sam Bennett is just not even a sleeper. He's tough. You got Kachuk, you got Gadjevich. all three of those guys are really, really tough. No super heavy, just a tough team. Nothing really on the back end, but just, I don't know, something to think about. We should do an episode. Who has the toughest team in the league? Because there's teams that have the one-dimensional fighter, but then there's teams that just have team toughness, and they have a guy on every line who can really throw one. Interesting thing to kind of chew on a little bit.
That would be a good episode. Yeah.
Moving on, though. There was a heavyweight tilt last night between the East and the West. I talk about it a lot. Which conference is better, the East, the West? Where's the power shifting? It was in the East, it's shifting West. I think the power lies in the West now. People always come at me. Look at the interconference matchups, this and that. I'm entitled to my own opinion. And we had a clear-cut example of it last night. High-powered team in the East, the New York Rangers. Best team in the NHL right now, the Winnipeg Jets, facing up in Madison Square Garden. Prime time, baby. Prime time. Great game. Absolutely great game. Loved it. Back and forth. Two all-star goaltenders, Connor Hellebuck, Igor Shesterkin. Fantastic. Two of the best in the game. Two high-powered offenses led by superstars. You got Scheifele, you got Connor, you got Panarin, you got Zibanejad, Lafreniere, you got Norris guys on the back end with Fox and Morrissey. It's a who's who, Tim. Tell me how the game went, Tim. What did you think of this game? The Winnipeg Jets won 6-3. You said in the notes here that they mollywopped them. What does that mean?
Yeah, this was the game of the night for sure. And I think it was a great test for Winnipeg because we can always say, how strong is the East? How strong is the West? Not that they haven't played good teams, but if they run into another team that we know is good, mm-hmm. how close is it going to be? Can they pull out the win? You have the Hellebuck versus Sirkin matchup, like you said. And the Winnipeg Jets passed this test with flying colors. They looked really good. The game was tied at different points. It was 1-1 at one point. It was 2-2 at one point. Then they start to pull away. There's a couple of things I know you want to break down, some of the goals that kind of led to this outcome. But I think the thing for me is that the big players rose to the big moments for Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Not just Hellebuck, who made some amazing saves, even though he let in three goals. But it was 2 points from Scheifele and Ehlers, two goals, including an empty netter, and another assist from Kyle Connor. Those are your three best offensive options. And those guys rose to the moment against one of the best teams in the league and delivered. And a lot of those goals were early in the game when it was tight. So that was really good. And then obviously that gorgeous goal from Gabriel Vilardi, power play mm-hmm. goal. He knocks down the sauce pass. I don't know what that shot was from the defenseman, but makes a beautiful give and go and just scores in the back end there. It's just lovely. So it was cool to see Winnipeg was rise to the moment and the best stars deliver.
The best stars are the New York Rangers. Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Trocheck, completely invisible. The best line for the Rangers, and it's been this way all season long, is Kako, Cooley, and Hedl. Very, very good third line. So the fault doesn't lie with that line. The fault lies with their top guys. And at the end of the day, it lies with Mika Zibanejad. -4. That means you're on the ice for 4 goals. Tim, every single goal that he was on the ice for was 100% his fault.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this, you know, to pile on this guy, because everybody knows I've been very critical of him going back to last year. This guy sucks. He has flashes where he's like, oh, man, that was pretty good. That was like 2 minutes. The rest of the 58 minutes of the game, he is a cancer to this team. He is so incredibly bad. The first goal of the game, the Rangers hit the post. First shift, Kreider. Great start to the game. They come down the ice. He turns it over. Boom. Such a soft turnover from his zone. The Jets pick it up. Give it to Scheifele in the slot. 1-0. Just such a soft play. First minute of the game. Go high and hard, dummy. Get it out of the zone. He just like, whoop, whatever. Flips it up the boards. Ho-hum. Okay, that's fine. The second goal of the game. He's coming into the offensive zone. Just loses the puck. Absolutely loses it. Winnipeg Jets get it. Give it to Kyle Connor. Going on the break. 2-on-1. Kyle Connor. He is one of the best goal scorers in the league. Bears. 2-1 for the Winnipeg Jets. That's at the end of the second period. One of those crucial times in the game. The first 3 minutes of the game. The last 3 minutes of the game. Of the period, excuse me. And in the first period, he cost his team 2 goals. in the most crucial parts of the period. And this is your best player. This is the guy you need to go out and contribute positively on the offensive end. The fourth goal, it's a 3-2 game. Very much in it. He gets his pocket picked in the neutral zone by someone back-checking. That's bad. That's bad. The Jets come into the offensive zone. They're rimming it around. The puck goes to his damn defenseman. And this is Tim 10 seconds after he turned it over. So they turn it over, gets rimmed in. Trouba rims it around, trying to get the puck out of the zone. Dylan DeMello gets the puck at the point, and he makes a play to the half wall. Mika effing Zibanejad does a flyby on Dylan DeMello. After turning it over in the neutral zone, he just skates by him into the neutral zone again and does a big loop back into his zone. All you have to do is hit him a little bit or just stop. Stop in front of him. Dylan DeMello, overpaid but smart hockey player, played with him. He sees Zibanejad do the flyby, and he goes, oh, I have a ton of open ice. I'm going to enter the offensive zone a little more. I'm going to get aggressive. What happens next? Kyle Connor gives him the puck. He gives it over to Scheifele right in front of the net for a tap-in. The game's over. 4-2. Three goals attributed to the Jets, all because of dum-dum Mika Zibanejad being selfish, not working hard, being lazy, -3. He gives up the puck again when they pull the goalie. Just a little flipper puck to the net. Jets pick it off. Boom. 6-3. You're -4. And you are the second highest paid forward on the team. You've been there probably as long as anybody, except for Kreider. This guy sucks, Tim. He is absolutely a drain on this team. He needs to go, but he can't go. He still has 3 years left on his contract. 5 years left on his contract. Excuse me. At $8.5 million, it's absolutely embarrassing. How do these guys not get on him? This is why this team won't win. This is exactly why this team won't win. Oh, I spent a lot of time on him, but this headline should be Jets versus 19 guys and Mika Zibanejad, because if he doesn't play, the Rangers might win this game.
Yeah, that's the crazy funny part. It's funny that you spend so much time on that because Sean Avery, obviously former Rangers guy, is on him on Twitter all the time. And he does these little video breakdowns and just basically describes everything that he's doing wrong.
Oh, they'll watch him. They're a little propane.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And like you mentioned, like he's getting paid a lot of money. And you can't – it's one thing if you're not producing offensively, but you're doing other stuff. You know what I mean? Or if you're like – yeah, he has the odd turnover, but he produces, so it's worth it. Like a Pasternak. He's got some ugly, ugly turnovers all the time, but he scores. And so you take the good with the bad. Zibanejad is not scoring. He has 2 goals in the season. He's got 11 points total in 14 games, which is not like it's a slouch, but nowhere near good enough for what he's being paid and what the team needs from him. He's -6 on the year. And this is a guy who's been a 40-goal scorer before. So I don't understand. It's not like he is playing with different line mates. He's on power play one. He only has, 2-3 power play points this year? It's just strange that they keep trying to run this back and hopefully that it works out and that it shakes out, because he has been the best player on this team in different parts of his career. But right now, he's the one that's dragging him down. Last night was a perfect example of that.
Listen, I'm not telling you the contract changes the player, but he signed a new 8-year, $68 million contract 2 years ago. And since then, his play has absolutely plummeted. And maybe that's the case. I played with a guy in Buffalo, Ville Leino. As soon as he got that ticket, oh, man, did he shut it down. Absolutely shut it right down. Started painting, playing the guitar, not focusing on hockey whatsoever. The guy could care less. He was getting ripped in the media. Everybody was coming after him. Worst contract ever. He would laugh. He's like, yeah, I still make a ton of money. It was just funny, and I can see the same thing happening here, where he signs that contract. In the last 2 years, this guy has been bad. The year before, he got 91 points in 82 games. Last year, he's 72, which is okay, but he shuts it down in the playoffs, and this year, it's just a continuation of the playoffs, where it's just not the same guy we saw for the last decade. And he's getting the opportunities, like you said, first power play unit, first line. He plays probably 15, 20 minutes a game. He's always in the offensive zone draws. He's playing with great players. I don't understand what happened. They have to do something. You can't keep putting him out there with Panarin and Lafreniere, buttressing him up. It just doesn't work. You have to bump them down. You have to make a change, because if that's what you're going to get when you're playing the best team in the league at home, huge game, everybody watching, and you turn it over four times and you're dash four and you show no heartbeat whatsoever, woof. Woof, woof, woof. What are you going to get when you play like Utah on a Tuesday in Utah? Do you think he's going to show up to that game? If that's the effort he's putting at home versus the Jets when everybody's watching?
I'm also thinking, like, if the Rangers get matched up against Florida, like, they could get swept. And even, like, a Carolina and Zibanejad's facing against Jordan Staal every shift, like, he's just going to be in a tiny little box and not produce. Yeah, it's frustrating. Although I will say, you know, not to take anything away from the Jets, they scored 6 goals last night, including an empty netter. And it's the 8th time in 16 games. My math is right. That's 50% of the games where they've scored 5 or more goals, which is just bananas. It's crazy what they're doing right now. And not only are they scoring that much, but they're getting historic level goaltending from Hellebuck as well. So pretty special what's happening with the Jets team this year.
Well, and they're not shootouts either. And we can go dig into this another time, but they've only given up 34 goals in 16 games. That's one of the best paces in the league. So they're almost doubled their goal differential. They're plus 39. It's absolutely incredible what they're doing so far on the offensive end and on the defensive end. This team is a wagon. I think this is the best start in NHL history right now, 15-1.
It is.
Am I quoting myself? All right, moving on. A team that's not really doing so well. Winnipeg Jets starting hot, answering some questions. The Winnipeg Jets doubled down this offseason. They could have, you know, went a different direction. Kevin Cheveldayoff, you had a decision to make. Do I get rid of Hellebuck? Do I move on from Scheifele? Do I kind of start again? I have some good young players. I have some pieces. I can make this work. We haven't won in the playoffs ever. He's like, no, we're going to stick with this core. The same questions were posed to Kyle Dubas 2 years ago. A lot of expiring contracts. What are we going to do? You know, Letang is on an expiring contract. Evgeny Malkin's on an expiring contract. What do we do with this core? There's still some value there. We can get some good capital if we go ahead and trade them. Nah. We're going to bring them all back. We're going to bring everybody back. And you know what? We're going to double down. We're going to bring in the reigning Norris Trophy winner in Erik Karlsson. We're going to take his whole contract on, $10 million. We're going for it. We're going to milk every single drop out of these superstars, who, by the way, are 37 years old, 38 years old, and 37 years old. And you bring in a 34-year-old journeyman. And that's what Erik Karlsson is. He's a journeyman with a huge contract. And you're going to go for it. Well, Tim, fast forward to now. Not good. Penguins are 6-9-2. They just got absolutely blasted by the Dallas Stars at home the other day. My buddy went to the game, friend of the show, Neil Wachowski, brought his kids. His son is in a religious order in Ohio. So he's like, I'm going to go visit him and go see the game in Pittsburgh. He spent money. He drove down there from Michigan. That's a big commitment. He shot me a text 10 minutes into the game. He's like, it's 4-0 Dallas already.
Yeah.
Then he goes, it's 5-0 after one. And I said, you should leave. He's like, I can't. I spent too much money on these tickets. I'm invested. We're staying till the end. They ended up being 7-1. Penguins get booed off the ice. What did Malkin say after this is when you know it's bad. When the guy who never talks, this guy never speaks. What is he saying after the game, Tim?
Yeah, even he had to apologize on the record. He said this yesterday about Monday's game. Last night, I want to say sorry to the fans. They watched a really bad game. I hope we together find a good way, win tomorrow, and start building the team better. For Malkin, like you said, of all people to be the one, like, I got to say something. And like they feel bad for the fans to watch it. It's not the fact that they're losing. It's they're getting spanked and they're not competing. And this is it's frustrating. And it's led to a situation where the Penguins are sellers early. It's not a trade deadline thing. It's not a holiday freeze type thing. It's now. Kyle Dubas reportedly told GM that everyone in his roster is available except Sidney Crosby, per a report from Taylor Hasse of the PGH Network. And so everyone's looking, and the trade started already. Lars Eller was traded yesterday back to Washington. He obviously won a cup there for a couple of picks. The first of several pieces that are probably going to be moved. They have some ones that are pretty movable, that are either affordable or you know, solid players, but others that are not quite like the Raquels of the world. And Brian Ross, even though he's a pretty solid player, I don't think people are going to take that contract on. So I don't know how it's going to shake out, but they are going to be a team to watch that's going to start wheeling and dealing now.
Well, first, can we just talk about Yevgeny Malkin? And I know it's a second language. He's been in the USA for 20 years now. Can we work on that a little bit?
I thought it was fine.
It's fun. No, it's definitely okay. But we had Nikita Zadorov on the show. He's been in the States for 10 years. His command of the language is incredible. Malkin could care less about learning English at all. Like, that is a very choppy sentence. And I know. I only speak one language. You know, I can speak a little bit of French. That's about it. This guy, he's speaking to reporters in his second language, but he's been here for 20 years. I think that's funny.
I think there's a thing with Japanese players in baseball where they know more than they let on. And so like they use a translator, even though they can speak, because they just don't want to speak and they don't want people to speak to them. And so they kind of put out that little bit of a shield. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that happening with Malkin.
That's smart.
Certain guys know more than they let on, you know?
That's pretty smart. But back to the team. Is this a case of, or it is a case of too little too late?
Yeah.
This should have happened 2 years ago when I said it should have happened. You should have just carved this team, traded everybody, and rebuilt again. When's the last time they won the Stanley Cup? You know offhand, I think it was in
2019.
19 they won it?
Maybe 18. 18
was the Caps.
Yeah.
Or the Blues, excuse me. Yeah. They should have blown it up after that. 21 at the latest. Like that was it. That was the prime time Pittsburgh Penguins back then. I don't see how they blow this team up whatsoever. The value's not there. Is a GM really going to trade for a Malkin and give up a substantial amount for a 38-year-old forward who still has one more year left on his contract making 6.1? I don't think so. Is the GM going to go and trade for a Chris Letang who has 3 years left on his contract at 6.1? He's 37 years old. And the same goes for Carlson. He's a little bit younger. The guy has issues. There's already reports coming out of Pittsburgh that the GM, the coach, the organization as a whole is just concerned about his game. They're concerned about his nonchalant avenue. This is coming from the Athletic reporter, Josh Yohe. And he says the organization is concerned that Carlson is not improving and he's happy about his play. Like he actually goes around telling reporters and telling everybody else that, you know, I'm playing good, man. What do you mean? Not my fault. I'm playing fantastic. I'm putting up points, and he is. I think he's got 12 points in whatever many games, but woof, he sucks on this. But we knew this going into this. So if I'm Kyle Dubas, I'm saying all the right things. Yeah, we're going to blow it up. But if you're an opposing GM team, Tim, and you look at this roster, who excites you?
I think there are some players. I mean, exciting, I wouldn't say is exciting, but like Nolan Acciari is a cheap bottom six option that I think is really good. But I think Malkin does excite me. He's producing like he's not quite he's 30, but he's producing pretty well. He makes $6 million after this year for one more season. I think there are some teams that would do that. I think Dubas is probably willing to eat some money in the right situation. So I think there's a lot of teams that could use a top six center. So I think, you know, I think he could beat Marcus Pedersen's a pretty good defenseman. They have some, you know, bottom six pieces. I don't think like Anthony Beauvillier is not producing, but he's only making 1.25 and he's got an expiring contract. Maybe someone takes a depth on a flyer on a depth forward like him, but Raquel's not going anywhere. He makes $5 million for three more years after this one. Brian Ross makes 5.25 for three more years after this one. Obviously Carlson's not going anywhere. Ryan Graves, probably not going anywhere. Letang, maybe, you know, so I think I think the Malkin one does make sense to me, but this also sets up the question of like, okay, everyone but Crosby was the statement from Dubas. So does that mean that he's not willing to move Crosby, or is he kind of speaking for Crosby there where they've already spoken and he's like, hey, listen, Sid wants to be here. He's not going anywhere. Or do you think it's him, the GM, saying I'm not willing to move him for hockey operations reasons type thing?
Yeah, it's a funny situation. I can imagine Kyle Dubas making this statement and Crosby sitting at home going, damn it,
dude,
come on, shut up. I want to go. Like, get me out of here. It's loyalty is a strange thing. because it's always great to say you want to play with the same team your entire career, but then you look back and you go, man, I really missed out on my last few years. Maybe I should have went somewhere else. And I think this is where Sidney Crosby's at this point in his career, because the Penguins aren't good this year. They won't be good for the foreseeable future. And here's a guy who's 37 years old, and he's playing at the top of his game. He's a point per game guy, does everything on the ice, and he's doing it on a team that really hasn't been good in the last few years. Like last year, he was 94 points. The year before that, 93 points. He's killing it. He reminds me of LeBron James. As much as I hate LeBron James, he's still an incredible basketball player at his advanced age. And basketball is such a physical sport, running up and down the court. It's hard on your body. He absolutely is just one of the best players still at, what, 38? Crosby's in that same boat. So you would hate to see this guy play out the remaining years of his contract on a team that's just a lottery team. You know, an easy win for the contenders. And he's trying his heart out and he's getting his point per game and he's doing all the little things, and you can tell he's being frustrated, but he's loyal because he doesn't want to upset the fan base. He doesn't want to upset the organization who's done so much for him. And you have to toe that line. And this is maybe where the organization has to step in and just say, you should go elsewhere. You should go play somewhere else because we aren't a winning team. We want you to go. We want you to succeed. We want to see you maybe lift the cup again. It's not happening here. So for Kyle Dubas to say that, it's pretty glaring. Like, why is he the only one who's untouchable? I don't understand that.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this because in one sense, like, he's been there forever. I think he's an ownership stake, doesn't he, Crosby?
I don't think you can be an owner and be a player on the team, but so no.
I think he's got something where he's invested. I don't know, something like that. Maybe someone correct
maybe
me if I'm wrong.
Right. But yeah.
He's a Pittsburgh Penguin for life, and so it's hard for a guy like him to think about playing somewhere else. And especially, we know he's like a routine guy. He likes his stuff, and it'd be hard for him to change. And he's got three rings already.
Yeah,
it's not like a jumbo situation where, like, let's give this guy a chance where he can finally win. Like, he's got his trophies, he's got his hardware, and so maybe there is a sense of, like, you know what, like, I'm just gonna ride this out. I'm a Penguin for life. But if Patrick Kane can be traded and go somewhere else, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Then Crosby can too. And I wonder, like, it's just such a waste of him still playing at such a high level. Or even, like, I mean, I know Ovi's played great for the last couple of weeks, but the last couple of years he was dwindling, but still, you know, good enough to be a secondary scoring piece and maybe you can make a team better. Crosby still can carry a line.
Yeah.
Crosby still can, like, you can run the offense through him regardless of his age. You can run the power play through him. Like, he's still at that level. And so it sucks to think that someone like him can't go compete for another cup. And all kinds of rumors are being out there. Biz throughout the Avalanche, which I think is a great fit for so many reasons.
That's just right? Nathan MacKinnon, yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously they need that talent up front.
They have the space, yeah.
Yeah, and so maybe that's a situation that makes sense. But I hope it would be very exciting to see him get moved and just watch what he can do with a new set of alignments and a new team. And I don't know. I hope that Crosby and Malkin both get traded. I would love to see that for them as players and for us as hockey fans, just the excitement that would come with that. But I have a feeling that this is going to be, it's going to be tertiary pieces. I think most likely Malkin, Sid, and Letang ride out their contracts.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because he's putting up points, and the same goes for Malkin, and they're playing with nobodies, right? They have no solid wingers on this team. That's it. Like, Rust is okay. He's playing with Drew O'Connor. Malkin's playing with Michael Bunting and Raquel and Rust. And it's a terrible team.
Yeah.
They're strong down the middle with Crosby and Malkin. But after that, it gets pretty, pretty thin, pretty, pretty quick. So if they can do that with those wingers, imagine if he did go to Colorado, how fun that would be playing with those wingers.
That'd be awesome.
You know, getting that defensive matchup, because everyone's still going to go after Rantanen and MacKinnon. Oh, that'd be so fun. But maybe there is some moves to be made. The one thing in contracts these days, everybody has a no-move clause. Full no-move clause for Crosby, for Malkin, for Letang, for Carlson. 100% across the board. They have to approve any trade that comes through the pipeline. And these other secondary pieces, you mentioned Raquel. He's got an 18 no-trade list. So all he has to do is go pick the team. Boom, boom, boom. I'm not going anywhere. Same goes for Bunting. Same goes for Rust. All these players that could be potential trade targets, they're handcuffed. Ryan Graves, I know he would be a hot commodity, friend of the show. He's got a 12-team no-trade list. So a lot of work to be done for Kyle Dubas. I think he put himself in this situation when he brought in Erik Karlsson. Did he re-sign all these guys? I want to say he did.
I don't think he did.
Or was that Rutherford?
I think it was Rutherford before him. And yeah. I think, because I remember thinking, like, why did they let him make those moves and then they fired him, right?
Yeah.
Like, they let him sign the contracts and then they parted ways, which was the timing of that was strange. But I don't know for sure off the top of my head. I know some Penguins fan is screaming at their radio right now because they know more than we do.
No, but I agree. Because they both signed in the offseason of 2022. So that was 2 years ago. And Dubas went, I think, 2 years ago. He's been there. So maybe they might overlap. I don't know. But whatever the case, he's got a lot of work ahead of him. Their starting goaltender sucks in Tristan Jarry. They're starting their backup in Nedeljkovic. Their defense is a train wreck with Karlsson. Thinks he's playing fantastic, and he's just horrible. And everything up front, like we just talked about, there's not a lot there. Not a lot of good young prospects. Not a lot other than Crosby and Malkin. So it'll be interesting to see in the next coming months what they do with this team. Because if he's saying there's a fire sale coming and we're only in November, there's a long way until that trade deadline, Tim. There's a lot of work to be done, a lot of deals to be made. And Kyle Dubas, he's not one to sit on his hands. He likes to make moves in the offseason. He's not much of an in-season dealer. But boy, oh boy. What a masterpiece would this be if he can rework this team? Much like Trevelyan did in Calgary, where he kind of revamped it, sold everything, and started again. But anyways, moving on. What are we talking about next?
Quick hits, not really much today. The one I think I wanted to mention, this is one of the best ones yet.
My gosh.
The NHL hired Ken Holland. Here's the title. Hockey Operations Consultant. They're just making stuff up now. I can't imagine what this could mean. It's basically like, hey, like, you seem to know a lot. There's like a meme about being a consultant. It's like being a consultant is like saying basically, maybe. I don't know. I don't know, though. And then here's a bill. Here's an invoice, right? Like, yeah. That's basically what's happening here. So, yeah, I thought you'd have a laugh at that.
But even hockey operations, like, just hopefully what he would be good at is the schedule side of things. Look at the schedule, see where things are failing, and try to help in that situation, because it feels like this year they've just dropped the ball. All the overseas games, all the back-to-backs, the big frozen frenzy that just fell flat on the opening day of the NBA, those sorts of things, election night where they had a ton of games. So that would be a spot where you could see him come in and make a difference, but he won't. He won't do that. Imagine trying. I've thought about this because we complain about the schedule a lot. Imagine sitting down with the calendar, 32 teams, and going, let's do the schedule. That'd be so hard to figure out. Travel, make sure teams are, you know, not getting back and forth from California. You have to do one trip and just making it nice for TV and avoiding big dates. And then you have to factor in all the rinks and the concerts that they already have booked. It would just be an absolute just logistical nightmare.
There's a certain type of brain that just loves a problem solving attitude like that. It's not me. That puzzle is, I'm staying far away from that. I could not imagine trying to do that. So
for all the stones I throw, maybe I should give the schedule makers a little bit of a break, but that is someone's job.
Well, it's to me, it's less about the schedule and more about the PR. Like, how do people not know about this stuff? You know what I mean? Like, oh, we put it in the homepage of a site. Is that not enough? No, it's not.
I think what you do is you Tarantino it. You just work backwards. So you pick the games that you want to see the most in the primetime games. You know what I mean? So start of the season, those are the locks. Okay, what would be fun games on Hockey Night in Canada? Those are the locks. Let's pick a random Wednesday where there's nothing going on and make that like a Hockey Wednesday. Schedule all the games. Then you work backwards. I think that's, you know, that might be a smart way to do it. Maybe they do it that way. I don't know. We'll never get that call.
Why aren't we in charge of everything?
Well, just player safety and scheduling. Give me $200,000 and I'll do it. That's all I need. I'm a very simple man. Tim, what would it take for you to do that job?
$200 sounds fine. I would take that.
You can't make the same as me.
Okay, $220.
How there about you that? Go. More. You're making me laugh today. It's very funny. All right, everybody. I think that's all. Anything else, Tim, you want to say?
No.
How's Julia doing, by the way? Have you heard from her?
Yeah, I've heard from her, yeah.
No?
She's just, they're running around all day getting the film, the footage.
Some of our listeners had some interesting thoughts about her going on her work trip. I'm doing air quotes on YouTube. Filming some content.
Censor these YouTube comments. Yeah.
Well, it made a lot of sense to me, some of the comments. I'm like, it doesn't make, like, her job doesn't make sense to me.
That's the part that's a you problem. She works as an advertising executive and goes on shoots and does production stuff. It's pretty straightforward. I don't know why that's hard to wrap your head around.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything else. I got the wheels are spinning, but I'm trying to stay on your team here. But anyways, okay. That's all. We appreciate the support, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Go out and make a difference. We'll see you on Friday, right, Tim?
That's right.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Have a good one.